1850 715 815.
Good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. Barbara Moynihan. Barbara, good afternoon. You there, Barbara?
I am.
Okay, Barbara, you contact us about... You spent half the year in Spain and half the year in Ireland, the winter in Spain, the summer in Ireland, and you've many English friends, and you say... Well, tell me, what happens when you start to discuss politics and Brexit?
Well, you can imagine there's a sort of a mutual respect, but nothing gets said. And when anything does get said, I'm afraid there's a sort of a patronising attitude mm-hmm. to Ireland. And I'm just a bit tired of this whole Brexit business. And I think that...
Barbara, can you imagine? I can't imagine. I don't know what their position is. Are they all Brexiteers?
Well, put it this way. I'm part of the grey wave, Joe. So yeah. Most people would be at this stage retired. Mm-hmm. And so sort of they're comfy to an extent. And I think that if the young people had got up and voted...
Yeah, I know. I don't want to talk about the referendum. Yeah. What I want to talk about is what is the view of expats who will, for example, if they're on UK pensions, the pound is going through the floor, their pensions are being devalued by the week. Surely they're saying, are we mad leaving the EU?
No. Because there okay. is an element, there's an element of the thinking, Joe, of, I'm afraid, the great British Empire, which I sometimes say to them, look, that day has dead and gone. It's a bit like, batten down the hatches mm-hmm. and united we stand, together we fall. But I just think they're shocked at Ireland's attitude to all this, that we're expected basically to roll over and just nod our heads in agreement with them. And I think if push comes to shove, I think we should show our support of Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney and the government. And I want to pay compliment to Micheál Martin for putting his country first as opposed to his party, which, unlike in Britain, the Conservatives certainly have not done.
Okay, you're saying the expats in Spain are all Brexiteers?
Well, I didn't particularly... My email was not really about all the expats in Spain, Joe, to be honest with you. I'm more concerned with Ireland's stance in all of this. And I think that Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney have been vilified to a certain degree.
So do you think, Barbara, isn't there that quote attributed to Boris Johnson before he was elevated, that when he was told Leo Varadkar's name, he said, I thought they were all called Morphy over there.
Oh, well, look at Joe. Well, doesn't that just illustrate the whole patronising attitude, I'm afraid, that many of the political elite in Britain have to this country? It's a patronising attitude, and I think they've got a shock that we've stood up and said, no, we're not going to be pushed around. And I think also, Joe, it sends out a message to the EU to stand by Ireland, because if they throw us under the bus, mm-hmm. what does that say about other small countries that are members of the European Union as well?
Okay, say with us, Barbara, 51551, joe@rt.ie. Rory Fellows. Rory, good afternoon. I mentioned pensions. But by the way, Rory, I know you live in Ireland, obviously, but do you regard yourself as an expat or an immigrant? Or an Irishman?
I'm in the process, actually, of applying for citizenship. So I've become an immigrant. Perhaps I was an expat to start with. Who knows?
Your pension.
I've been spending my summers here since the 1960s, and I've lived here for 15 years. So yeah. I've immigrated. My pension. I don't know about anybody else, but we are certainly seeing the effects. I mean, we have lost. probably about 18% of our income in the last 3 years.
Because you're on a UK pension?
Because we're in all of our income, actually. We have a couple of pensions, okay. And I have a small stipend, and all of it comes from the UK. So, yeah, we've looked at that, and I think if it hits parity, it goes to about 24% of our original our income the day before the Brexit vote. So, yep, I mean, a quarter of your income is an awful lot to lose.
So what do you think of Brexit?
Personally, of course, I voted Remain because I'm a European. I like the concept of Europe, and I've worked a lot, I should add, on the continent. But I have two brothers, both of whom are very ardent Brexiteers, and at least one of them is pretty ardent. WTO, let's jump off the bridge.
And which one is that? Because I heard your brother Julian Fellows, who's the creator and writer of Downton Abbey, and he'll be back in the news again as the movie comes out, won't he?
He will, sir.
Yeah, he will, sir. Julian is an ardent Brexiteer.
He is. He's also, you might know, otherwise Lord Fellows of Stafford, having coaxed his way into the House of Lords via lots of donations and good charitable works and the way you do these things. And he certainly is a believer. My read on this is that people who think in those sorts of terms, long-term, and who think business thoughts sort of for a living, they can look at a 3 to 5 year period as a short period of time. And if it takes 3 to 5 years for the British economy to recover, that's an acceptable margin for them. And I think, incidentally, I mean, as it happens, both those brothers of mine are considerably better placed financially than we are, because my wife and I are a couple of idiot artists who...
Julian is a... It's, well, they just look up Julian and he's a millionaire.
Many times over.
Yep.
No, I mean, that's my point, really. And David is not that sort of multimillionaire, but he has an income that he derives from several different countries.
Is Julian...
secured.
You're worried about money, but is Julian worried about money when he says, let's get out ASAP and WTO and let's not just crash out, let's get into the silver thunderboard?
I'm not entirely sure what Julian's position is, because his first position is, let's not have any big fights in the family. So we have a sort of general agreement not to talk about Brexit. But David and I talk about it quite a bit. He's the one who is prepared to, in fact, encourages a WTO exit. I don't quite know. I don't read Julian's speeches. I'm not that sure of where he stands. I would think he, like Boris Johnson, would prefer to have a withdrawal agreement so that the transition period can be handled properly instead of it all being a bit overnight, which will be, hard for everybody. And the point
could
is...
Could I ask Mr. Fellows a question
Rory, yes, Barbara.
Could I just ask you that, like, I'm not an economist, I'm just an ordinary citizen, but this business has been promoted all the time that the backstop can be limited. I mean, the most ordinary person knows that why on earth, if you limit the backstop is there just as a protection. But if you put a limit of, say, 5 years or whatever, sure, the clock can be just run down on that. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't want to see violence back on this, which will definitely happen.
Well,
hang on, Barbara.
Why is violence inevitable?
Oh, Joe, God, look, I would be virtually certain that if a hard border goes back up there...
A checkpoint.
Yes, that's feeding into the hands of the paramilitaries.
There's no justification.
Do you not think that would happen? Well, I certainly do. I mean, they're already threatening it.
Can I drop in? I mean, I think, first of all, violence is happening now. It's already happening. That poor journalist girl was shot by someone who would like to see a good reason for shooting away. I think that is definitely an issue. I think the problem behind the whole backstop thing is that it is not a UK problem. And we started off by saying that it was for the UK to solve it. And this is like Trump asking Mexico to pay for the wall. The point is,
but you're the ones who want to leave, Rory.
Yeah, but we're the ones that need the border. The EU is trying to protect itself. It's very important for the EU that the UK should suffer for this, because if they don't suffer for this, we'll lose Austria, we'll lose the Netherlands, we'll lose Greece, lots of Italy. These are countries that will leave the EU if they see that you can do it and more or less survive. So they're trying their level best to make it difficult. I personally think that to some extent, the Irish government has allowed the EU Commission to put them in this position so that we're the one with the embarrassing conversation all about the backstop, when really it's the EU that's going to have to solve it.
Okay, now,
look,
now,
can I just add this point to you? Yeah. There is no border between Finland and
Russia.
Yes, but
Rory, that notion is being promoted now by British interests who are trying to, in other words, put a wedge between Ireland and the EU by basically saying that Ireland is like a puppet of the EU being manipulated. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a British notion.
Well, I think it's just a common sense one myself. You can, of course, say that I'm being British about this, but I don't think so. The point is, as I say, the controls between Finland and Russia, which is a very identifiable, as it were, opponent or anyway, not a colleague of the EU, there is no border. Because it's all done, the truth is 99.9% of everything that crosses any border anywhere is all done legally and with contracts and all sorts of things that are all handled, because that's the easy way to run a business. The issue of the northern border is much more, it's got nothing to do with trade, and half of the problem with talking to the British about any of this is that they are, as Napoleon said, a nation of shopkeepers. They think it's all about the trade, but it's not. As you point out, it's a big emotional issue for the Irish.
And
but
Rory,
the truth is, I think we've been put in a position that is not that defensible.
And when you, Rory, when you say we, are you referring to we as an Irishman, or we
as an Irishman?
As an Irishman. Okay.
Now,
just to be clear, thanks. Rory, have you detected, which is the sting of Barbara's point, have you detected among English people especially a deferential stroke, patronising attitude to Irish people now, saying, what in the name of God are you all doing over there siding with the EU, and we've looked after you for years, and on your own hall door, be it when the proverbial hits the fan. Is there a change among your English friends? Would they be saying to you, Rory, has Ireland lost the run of themselves?
No, because on the whole, my English friends are all people who don't think like that and who are not patronising. I mean, apart from the fact that I would say a good chunk of them are people that I know here, and whether they're holiday makers coming from England or they live here. No, actually, I don't come across that. But I remember having a conversation back in the 90s in an Irish pub up in North London with a group of guys who said that actually they were getting a sort of daily hit, you know, that slightly, you know, that kind of racist thing. It's like we used to tell paddy jokes, you know, in England, and indeed the Irish used to tell Kerry jokes.
They still tell them, by the way.
Well, they probably do. But
okay, let me bring in.
No one's told me one for a while.
Okay, 51551. Tom Baldwin. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm listening in with interest to your two previous callers.
Yeah.
I've been living in the UK. I lived in Scotland during their referendum to leave the UK, and I was in London before and during the Brexit referendum.
Okay.
And I prefer, as I told your researcher, I don't like interfering in the politics of the country where I work. It's nothing to do with me, so I try to avoid it. But sometimes it's not easy to avoid when somebody asks you a question and you're kind of pushed for an answer. And I explained that a Scottish guy that I worked with, he invited me down to a pub one night to meet three Irish guys who are friends of his. And the subject of Brexit came up. It was just before the referendum.
Okay.
And actually, at the time, Enda Kenny had been over to tell the diaspora how to vote. In other words, to vote to remain. So I asked the guys their opinion. Any Irish guys living in the UK had migrated when times are tough. One guy was a highly intelligent principal of a primary school from Galway, and the first two guys said they were going to vote leave, and the Galway guy says, I was going to vote Remain, but after Enda Kenny came over, I've decided I'm going to vote Leave.
Why?
And I said, why do you take that attitude? He said, because the reason why I'm over here and many thousands of Irish people is because of the political mistakes back in Ireland. And I wouldn't have had to emigrate if I was able to get a job back in Ireland. So I owe more to the British.
So are we being less than grateful to the British at the moment?
Well, as you know, I have a letter in today's paper, and more or less that's the slant, that we are being ungrateful. Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney are being ungrateful with their rhetoric of the past couple of weeks.
Well, what do you think should happen? Like, we had a suggestion yesterday that George Mitchell should be brought in to negotiate between the EU and the UK. That's where we're at. It's a complete standoff, isn't it?
It's a
total standoff.
The adage, it seems like the unstoppable force meeting an immovable object.
Yeah, well, so what do we do? Rory, have you any ideas mediator?
I've been writing to Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney over many months relating to Brexit, giving them advice, and more or less all I've been telling them was going to happen is happening, even down to the crash of Brexit.
But what advice are you giving them, Rory?
Well, it's not me that's giving advice.
I was trying to say the backstop was a non-runner. It couldn't work.
God, can we never stand on our own 2 feet? Are we never to be able to stand on our own 2 feet?
So what should be there, Rory, instead of the backstop?
I think myself that it is an error of judgment. The truth is that we could quite easily negotiate new trade deals with the UK. I think that the interesting thing for me, this is a quality that we share with the Japanese and the Madagascans, actually. There's something about being an island off a continent. The British have always been distrustful of the continent. It was always a bit of a push to get them into the EU. The Japanese aren't about to go into any sort of trade deal with the Chinese, I can tell you. And look at what's going on in Hong Kong. It's a mentality that probably goes back thousands of years, in which everyone who comes to an island prior to this century, really, or the last century, stayed there. And you had to absorb them in a way that on the continent they don't. They have a whole different attitude to compromise, to the way that they discuss politics, that is not British. And the only reason I think that Ireland is in the position it's in with the EU is because it was their way of getting around the English, who had been the mainland for, you know, whatever, 500 years. Mm-hmm. And this was their only means of economic escape. But really, mentally, it is a difficulty. We do have a different way of working, and that's why I think the Irish have been hoodwinked, as your gentleman suggests, by the EU into setting up this backstop thing, whereas, in fact, it's just a matter of sensible trade dealing and ordinary customs controls that you have on all borders, including all the borders within the EU. It's not, although there's a sort of free trade thing, it's not a free flow, but it's all done with discretion because, as I say, 99.9% of us are not trying to break the law.
Yeah, but there's 375 border crossings, isn't there, between Northern Ireland and the Republic?
Well, I worked up in Derry. Yeah. I worked up there for a year, and you could always tell you'd cross the border because the Republic Road was an absolute mess, and you had this really super smooth tarmac in the north. And, I don't think that border's going away for a long time for purely economic reasons. I think that people who live in the north, for now at least, and up until now, have felt, tremendous benefit from being part of the UK.
Say with us, 51551, Brendan Roach's in Dundalk, but he's in Bulgaria recently. Go ahead, Brendan.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yeah. I would just like to add what the lady who started the whole conversation off. Well, we have an apartment in Burgas in Bulgaria, and mm-hmm. we spend a lot of the summer out there. There would be quite a big number of British expats living in Bulgaria, and it's a growing number.
Okay.
One couple we meet regularly, just shortly after the Brexit vote, we were having a drink and a social conversation with them, and I asked them, how did they vote?
Okay.
And this couple lived in Greece for 8 or 9 years, but they've been living in Bulgaria for permanently for 12 years.
Okay.
So I asked them how they vote, and they said, oh, we voted to leave.
Okay.
And I said, why? And they said, well, there's too many foreigners now in Britain.
Yeah.
Mm. And did anyone pick up a mirror?
Well,
no, I don't mean a daily mirror. Did anyone?
The irony of but it's not a fabrication. This is totally true. It's incredible. So that's the sort of reaction. And just echoing what your first lady
Barbara.
Can I make a point? Yeah,
no, hang on a sec.
Sorry, Joe, Barbara, could you just ask Rory there when he says he feels, you know, Ireland was hoodwinked into this. Hmm. I would like to ask him, does he not feel the British people were hoodwinked into the way they voted? Because when I ask British people, they don't really know what they voted on. They voted on immigration and... basically, we want to gain control of our own laws and run our own country. But really, they don't know what they voted on. I've never had a good answer to that.
Yeah, but Barbara, your point about the backstop and the government is so correct on the backstop, as are Fianna Fáil. But doesn't it now look like the backstop deal, the back-the-stop insurance policy, which said if there was no deal between the EU and the UK when they left, that all Ireland would still be one economy. But what's happened is because there is no deal, there's definitely going to have to be border checks, and more than likely on this side, and we'd be told to do it by the EU or else the place would be flooded. Dublin Port would be flooded with chlorinated chicken stuff being brought in here without tariffs and without checks.
So the deal we did to avert something
is now creating it.
Okay. No, I tell you, Joe, they don't have to have, from what I've read and listened to, the checks can be done not on the border between north and south. They can be done at factory outlets. They can be done in other ways. But this business, I listened to Miriam talking to Geoffrey Donaldson this morning, and she bluntly asked him, well, what is the solution if we don't have the backstop? And he started going, he literally had no answer. Nobody has ever come up with an answer. And this business of Boris Johnson, who I think now is running scared because he feels that if he's a great after dinner speaker, I'd love him in my house actually. But it is a game of chicken. But why should we, having struggled for so long to get this peace, put it at risk?
Okay. The thing is,
well, by the way, Barbara, it seems Irish people love Boris Johnson, because wasn't it one of the conferences paid €50,000 to him to speak for an hour there earlier on in the year, and a significant number of attendees at that conference, I think the tickets were £1,000 each, a significant number of attendees were civil servants being paid for by you and me to go and pay €50,000 to see Boris Johnson, and apparently if you paid extra you could get to stand beside him and his crumpled suit. 5155.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. Richard Slater, you're listening to Rory Fellows. Go ahead, Richard.
I thought Rory encapsulated the problem. Sorry, hello, Joe. He talked about Ireland and Britain doing a unilateral deal. You see, the point is that Ireland and the UK at the moment are part of a large group of 28 that negotiate as one bloc. It's soon to become 27. So Ireland actually can't talk to the UK on its own. Now, to talk about the borders, I've lived in the border all my life. I'm in my 50s now. I've lived in the southern side of the border, so I remember vividly the experiences we had before. And there seems to be a really short memory in amongst people like Mr. Rees-Mogg and Mr. Johnson and their cohorts, Dominic Raab and that. They have a really short memory about what used to go on here. And anybody who sets up any kind of border, should it be a customs post or a policeman or a guard or whatever, I mean, it just gives a possibility of the whole thing reigniting. And with the greatest respect, no piece of ground is worth anybody being hurt or being killed over. And the other thing about the UK's position, I don't believe they have a position, is that they voted to make themselves poorer. They voted to leave the EU, yet they seem to think they can do it by remaining and retain all the benefits of the membership. It's like leaving your local tennis club but arriving down on Saturday afternoon and playing in the singles competition. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, I've watched programmes on TV where you have English people, mainly English people who are living in Spain, and they all voted to leave the EU. Yet they want to reside in Europe, but they don't want to be a member of the bloc anymore. It's utterly mind-boggling how sort of ridiculous in many senses and contradictory in other senses the position is. And the entire business community in the UK, and I do business with the UK, the entire business community in the UK does not want to leave. And they are the people that create the jobs and ultimately create the wealth which pays the pensions, which pays the social welfare. So, crazy setup, crazy setup.
Lillian McWilliams, say to Richard. Lillian McWilliams, your point, please.
Yes, I'd just like to ask Rory one question. If he considers Ireland to be just a puppet country in the EU, why does he want to become a citizen?
Oh, gosh, I'm sorry. No, I don't mean that at all. I think that the Ireland is a very, a surprisingly active and strong member of the EU and has quite a disproportionate say in its affairs. And I think that's precisely why Barnier has stuck them with this particularly unanswerable problem. Because the issue of the backstop is simply that Britain doesn't care if there's a backstop or not. From their point of view,
the backstop is a British idea, not an Irish idea.
Well, it was in an agreement.
But Rory,
are you implying there that the British strategy and negotiations were so good that we thought when we got the backstop, and the backstop has been the mantra of the Irish government for the last 3 years, we have the backstop, there'll always be the backstop, that's their insurance policy, that there'll be no border in Ireland. Yeah. But in truth, in what's 90 days' time, when there's a no deal, the very thing that the backstop was set up to prevent will actually reveal itself, whatever way is possible. But the main people who will have to put up the checkpoints are this side, the EU side.
Yeah, it is unfortunate.
So were we outsmarted by the British?
Well,
not for the first time.
Perhaps not for the first time, but I mean, actually, I don't think that it takes a lot of outsmarting. I mean, it was pretty obvious to me right from the start that it was an EU problem as to how to deal with the border. And I was,
You didn't answer my question, which was, why do you want to become a citizen of Ireland if you have such a poor view of us as a nation?
But I haven't got a poor view of you as a nation.
Well,
that's
I've
ridiculous.
I've been listening to what you've been saying, and it doesn't sound to me like you have a very high opinion of us.
No, that's completely wrong, and I think I'm very sorry that should be it. I don't think that if one makes criticism of a very narrow aspect of government policy in this country, I'm casting any sort of...
It might be narrow to you, but it's not narrow to us.
But I'm not casting an opinion about Ireland or the Irish. I'm talking about the issue. And the border is, for me, you know, I understand the importance of the border. God damn it, the first time I ever went to Ireland, I stayed in what was called Glasloch in those days, which actually crosses the border. And had all of these conversations back in the 1960s about what it all meant about the north and the south. So, I mean, I've been coming here for decades.
With respect, Glory, Glasloch close to the border, it doesn't cross it. But anyway, it's 6 miles from where I live. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, I seem to remember there was a bit right at the
backstop.
Top.
The backstop was put because we have the Good Friday Agreement. The reason there's a backstop there is to retain peace in Ireland. It was a British idea, a very good idea. The problem is that under the auspices of the Good Friday Agreement, that both countries have to, have no sort of physical border infrastructure, etc.
Yeah.
What I suppose, Joe, the question I would ask is, the backstop was originally put there and signed by the Irish and the British governments in the event of a crash-out Brexit, in other words, in the event of there being no deal between the UK and the EU, why does the backstop now suddenly disappear if the EU, or sorry, if the UK crash out of the EU? It doesn't make sense to me. It's illogical. Surely it's at that point that the backstop comes into play, and both sides have signed it.
I'm not saying anything to contradict that. All I'm saying is that it's our problem here in Ireland. It's an EU problem. It's not a British problem.
It's a British created problem, and
I know,
people
it's
have died because
it?
Of that border for most of my life. Thanks be to goodness, not the last 20 years. And I certainly don't want to see that starting up again.
No,
and Mr. Johnson has a responsibility.
Well,
then these guys need to live up to responsibility, and probably should stand up to the DUP in Northern Ireland, or not accept their vote to keep them in power. And then at that point, Northern Ireland would have the opportunity to become like the Singapore of Europe, and would have their feet in the UK on one side and in Europe on the other side.
I agree with you, but you try flogging that to the DUP. And at present,
it's not a case. The DUP are 10 members, but the DUP voters, all at this stage, a vast majority of them, big business, farmers, etc., in Northern Ireland, all said they accept the backstop and Mrs. May's agreement. So,
a lot of them probably voted Remain, but the deal as it stands, I mean, the point is, it works. The backstop doesn't work for Northern Ireland if it has a limit on it, because at some point, if it ends, then they have to conform to EU rules if there is to be no controls on either side of the border. All I'm saying is that actually, it's us who have to protect the border, because it's the EU that have the stronger rules. I mean, listen, I want to be an EU citizen. That's one reason for becoming Irish. I love living here. That's another reason for being Irish. I've spent every holiday, every day off that I've had for the last 40 years coming to Ireland. I don't think I have to defend the decision to become a citizen of Ireland. I just don't think that particularly means that you have to say...
I want to bring in Mike Bourke, who's been holding Kent Clare. Mike, your point, please.
Hi, Joe. Good. How are you? Yeah. Great programme. I'd just like to say that I was born in England, and I lived here for 40 years now. The difference in Brexiteers in England is two camps, really. One are the well-heeled Tories, millionaires, most of them, that will be totally immune to any consequences of Brexit.
Yeah.
And the others are the working class people who are just sick and tired of all the immigration, or immigration, should I say. That's the two parties, really, on opposite sides or on the same side. For the Brexiteers, do you know what I mean?
That's your thesis,
The truth is that they're not going to solve the immigration problem by leaving the EU. That's what's mad about that. Johnson has just said recently that, you know, he's taking the limits off, that the idea that they would reduce immigration to tens of thousands. He said, no, he's dropping that one. Because he knows perfectly well most of their immigrants come from other places altogether, not the EU at all.
But he wants to introduce a point system like Australia for
immigration. Yeah, he'll
do
like the Australians, who are a bunch
of... But Rory, do you concur with Mike's first point? It's the rich Tories, the cause of all this, the wealthy, the filthy rich, because they don't have to worry about money. Now, is that your brother Julian we're talking about?
Well, for a start, obviously Julian, and I think David as well, because he gets all of his income from America. I think that they, certainly the people that there is, as this gentleman says, absolutely, there is a group of Brexiteers who will survive this five-year recession. They don't care. It'll be okay in the end, chaps. And then there are the people who are hoping that in some odd way England is going to be restored to some earlier vision of England that they have in their heads. But I mean, I can remember coming back from Africa in 1965 after a year there, and I didn't recognise Gloucester Road because it had all been rebuilt. Now, it's like somewhere in Cairo. So, you know, what the heck?
And Angie Broderick is in East Wall. Angie, your point, please. 51551 joe@rte.ie. Go ahead, Angie.
Joe, everybody here is talking about the economic effect of Brexit, a crash out and a hard border. But I wish people would give more time and thought to reflect on the human aspect,
right,
especially in the day that's in it. Today is the anniversary of the massacre of the Miami Show Band.
I mentioned that
and
earlier.
And also the Cloudy bombing in Derry.
Yeah.
And I think it's a day that we should reflect on the victims and the survivors of the conflict. And if hard border will only bring us back to those hard days. And it's we're a country that need to heal. We haven't healed, Joe.
I think
the Good Friday Agreement was meant to be the start of a process, but neither government, the British or the Irish, have been very good in bringing it on. What we need is truth and reconciliation.
Yeah.
And the hard border, the reinstatement of a hard border is a really retro step for both countries and for the people living in both countries.
Damn right. One of the things that... one of the things that I think we have to be wary about as well, well, we don't have to be wary about it, but it's going to come, I think, and that's a poll, a Northern Ireland poll. I heard one of the Sinn Féin representatives this morning, you know, that this has to occur. There has to be a border poll. Not a border poll, but a poll in Northern Ireland and not the 32 counties. On reunification. But, and you know the consequences of that. That's
But in order to do that, we have unionists on this island as well.
I know.
And they need to feel, they can't be afraid of a united Ireland. Need to feel that they're included.
Lots of unionists in Northern Ireland, in the six counties, that now are do away with the border because their future is threatened, the likes of farmers and things like that. You know, they would join the Republic. And I feel it's the only way out of it. But
no, my point is that they shouldn't feel threatened. Had we moved forward with a peace and reconciliation programme, they wouldn't feel threatened. This is the problem.
You see, it's not them. It's not them that are the fact breach of fact in this all this. The thing is that it's the hard line. It's the ordinary working class unionists. And someone also said on the radio this morning they would be frightened of the orange guns coming out again, not the Republican guns.
I think that people are taking it. Politicians are taking it too flippantly, and they aren't taking into account the human cost. Now, Stephen Travers is one of the co-founders of
a survivor of the Miami massacre. Yeah,
and you know that he has Protestants and Catholics, and they speak and they tell their stories. And what they say is that no side has a monopoly on pain, and that is the truth. But if Stephen's Truth and Reconciliation platform could bring unionists and Republicans together, surely our politicians should follow his example. It is doable.
I've known Stephen for quite a few years now, and it is an extraordinary struggle that he's maintained.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think, frankly, I think the problem that he has is that the British are unwilling to own up to an awful lot of very bad, as the Queen came close to disposing of when she said there were things we wish had never been done. And I agree with you, and I agree with Stephen, this does actually all have to hit the deck, and it has to be exposed, and we have to confront it. I think the British will put it off until every British soldier that ever shot a man unreasonably or unjustly has died. And we'll get the reconciliation too late to make any good sense. It's very hard, but I think, I stand by Stephen and every effort he makes, but my God.
He's fantastic. He's absolutely remarkable. But the thing is that truth has to come before reconciliation.
Exactly.
And unless we have governments, both Irish and English, I'm not picking one of them, both of them need to work together, and we need a truth and reconciliation programme.
Let me bring in Declan Barron. Declan's in Ennis. Okay, your connection with Boris Johnson, Declan, first, please.
I know, my connection with that was I revealed that his ancestor, James O'Brien, was born in Bunratty Castle.
Okay, you have a lot to answer for.
I have a lot of dear friends who don't appreciate it.
I thought he was born in Boris and Ossory. Okay, does Boris Johnson know this?
He does, I wrote him.
And
what does that,
I only got a secretary's letter back.
And what does that make him Irish-wise? Can he get his game from Mick McCarthy? With Mick McCarthy.
No, but the point that I wanted to make, though, was that an awful lot of the British people voted for Brexit because of illegal immigration.
Yeah, okay.
And nobody is talking about how you stop illegal immigration without a hard border. You can do the trade and all that with technology and everything. But you can't stop illegal immigration without a hard border.
Keep going in that second. Are you saying that Dundalk will become the new Calais?
Oh, yeah, should be travel agents open up, getting people in, illegals, to bring them up to the border to
get them into the UK.
Excuse me, could I come in there?
Angie, yes.
I don't believe that's a fact. I mean, people are using it, but I think that the people that did vote for Brexit, they were like disenfranchised people. They're disengaged. They're the ones who are suffering from the economic slump. And the reason for voting was that, you know, things can't get worse. I don't think it's right to blame the immigration issue on it, because I know English people are good people. They don't have a problem with immigrants.
Well, I think we're probably somewhere in between those two ideas. I think there is quite a lot of resentment of immigration, and I know there's quite a dependence on that resentment in the campaign for Brexit. At the same time, as you say yourself...
The British, they have welcomed... I know there are people from former colonies, but the thing is, the British have welcomed them.
No, they have, indeed. And the point is, of course, always, there's a difference between the people you know on the street and the general, you know, kind of statistic in the newspaper.
Yeah,
so everybody's got neighbours from all over Europe and the world, and they're all, you know, they all get on fine, and they'll say things to you like, kind of, oh, well, yes, of course, but, you know, he's different. And no, he isn't. He's exactly the same as all the other immigrants. It's just you know him. I don't think he's going to be solved at the border. I agree, but there are 353
Do you think we need a mediator, a George Mitchell-type character between the EU and the UK, given that it's completely at loggerheads at the moment? Completely.
I mean, it would be a way.
Any ideas?
It could be me.
Any names, yes.
You know, the problem is a mediator may find himself simply...
Or herself,
I'm trying to be as reasonable as possible, and I thought I'd been making a good argument for the Irish, but my gosh, that woman was prepared to believe that I had no love of the Irish. So imagine how difficult it will be to mediate that conversation. I think they've done it pretty well.
We can't give up hope. We did get the Good Friday Agreement. And when we talk about the Brexit referendum, don't forget that the Good Friday Agreement was democratically agreed upon north and south of the border.
Yeah. I believe it can be done.
And we did, if we could do it, and we did do it with mediation. And if we need mediation, well, then we get mediation.
Off there, enough. Yeah.
Okay, sounds to me
we can't go back for anyone that remembers.
No, we shouldn't go back to that. No one wants to go back to that.
No.
But I think Simon Coveney is doing a pretty good job. And actually, I have to say here, we haven't yet tested the reality of Boris Johnson, because he's a performer. But he's also a very intelligent and quite liberal man. And I think of anyone... Certainly, I think Theresa May was a complete washout. And at least we'll be talking to someone who can think outside the box a bit.
Okay.
That may be what's needed.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Angie Bradwick, Declan Barron, Rory Fellows, Mike Bourke. Thanks indeed. 51551.